Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey guys, today with me, I have Alex Kahn. He is Germany's most followed social media coach. Hey, Alex.
Hey, how are you?
Is that really true? Are you the most followed coach in Germany?
At least I don't know anybody who has more followers than me, so I guess it's true. If you find somebody who's around like 400,000, give him over to me because I want to work with him.
So the other question is, have you bought a lot of these followers or are they all organic?
No, the story is I started with Periscope. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It was like the first live streaming
I do remember it,
service.
Yeah.
And I started on day one back in, actually around 3 years ago. They started on 26th of March in 2015. And by coincidence, I downloaded the app on day one. And I thought like, wow, it's like QVC, Home Shopping Europe, it's like TV 2.0. And I started using it, sharing my thoughts and how to use it. And Periscope liked that. And they featured me from day one for over 8 months. So everybody who downloaded the app got us a suggestion to follow me.
Oh, nice.
And that really helped because if you put it in perspective, I believe the numbers, if the numbers are correct, like Twitter needed 2 years to reach 1 million members. Facebook, it took Facebook 10 months. It took Instagram 2.5 months. And guess how long it took for Periscope to reach 1 million members?
I actually don't know. I would say maybe 6 months.
It was 1 week.
1 week. Oh.
It took them 1 week. So you can imagine it was good for me to be featured by them as they were growing very, very quickly. And then I started to cross-promote my channels, starting with Instagram and, of course, Twitter. I mean, Periscope was acquired by Twitter for, I guess, around 100 million. And that's how I grew my audience. And it's a very, like, U.S. audience. And, of course, as I'm in Germany and back in the time when I started growing my audience, I was living in the United States. And that's how I compared to German sizes. I have a huge following.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, because for a while I thought that your following is mostly Germans, but if you're English speaking to the U.S. audience, that's super unique.
It is. It is. It's funny to me. Sometimes when I meet German clients, right now I'm coaching a lot of German brands. When they started following me, like huge brands like Sixt is like one of the biggest car rental services we have here in Germany. They followed me when I was living in the States. And I didn't understand that I'm actually German because I was living in Los Angeles and I was speaking only English. And you can probably hear it. It's funny for Americans. Sometimes they come to me and they say, like, are you related to Arnold Schwarzenegger? Just because of my accent. So no, unfortunately, I'm not. I met him once in Soho House in LA, though, but that was just a coincidence. So yeah, it's quite funny for Germans that I'm speaking in English, living in the States. And then when I came back to Germany, I had to make my homework to really do a lot of keynotes and visit conferences. But people start to realize, oh, wow, he's actually a German dude. We've never thought of that.
So when you went back, did you start doing a lot more stuff in German or did you still continue doing it for the American audience or just English speakers?
So I guess 90% of my content is still English, as 90% of my audience is actually still English speaking. And right now I'm at that point to maybe start new channels. So clones of my original English-speaking channels to go more in the German direction because I'm right now in the shift from having more German clients than English-speaking ones. And, of course, every country prefers to talk in their own language. Means Germans love to speak German and love to listen and watch German content. So that's a kind of one crux I'm dealing with right now, kind of dilemma. But right now, until that point, most of my content is English.
Yeah, it seems you're in a very unique situation.
It is. It definitely is. Usually it's the other way around. People in Germany want to go overseas, yes, and they start speaking English. For me, it's exactly the opposite.
What challenges are you seeing with that? Because it's got to be, yeah, that's so unique. I'm curious.
Well, the good thing is that most Germans can speak English. They just don't prefer it. I would prefer to speak in my own language too. Sometimes people forget about it when I talk in English. That for me, it's much harder because it's not my mother tongue, right? It's not my original language. So I have to translate everything in my head beforehand, and that makes it a little bit more difficult to be on point. And sometimes it drives me crazy because I don't have that right word, especially when I do keynotes and panels and Q&A. That makes it a little bit more difficult than to speak in my own language. But I believe like they have to deal with it. I mean, and they deal with it most of the time. It's fine for them. But of course, all my coachings here in Germany, they're in German. And the German-speaking clients, of course, they speak with me in German. And all others, they deal with English.
Yeah, I was more thinking about the media. If the media is embracing you in Germany, or are you seeing some pushback a little bit by, you know, the people that just always done it in German and are like, hey, what's this guy doing trying to get into our market now?
It's funny. Most interviews I give are not in German and are not from German media. I'm dealing a lot with Greece lately, as I had a keynote there. I'm dealing with all over Europe, actually. It can be England, it can be Romania, as I said, it can be Greece, France. I'm getting a lot of more interviews, and I believe that's a very crucial point. I realized a great experience. You are more worthy in another country than your own because you're exotic. You're different.
Yeah, and I've seen that too. You know, I used to do music in New York, right? And I've always had people listening to me and saying, wow, like this is great, but always outside of the city. You know what I mean? Like it was always people from somewhere else saying, like, yeah, this is good, this is unique. But never, like, I mean, I had fans too, but it was just, you know, much harder in my own town than somewhere else.
It's very interesting because, of course, in the States, everyone speaks kind of the same. They all speak English. And if a German dude comes over, only because I'm German, it's already different. It's that German dude. Have you heard him? You hear it from the first sentence of my accent that it's different. And I believe I saw it at the beginning as a big disadvantage, right? Because I thought, well, everyone can speak the language better than I can, right? So why should English speaking like Americans, where all those social networks are deriving from? I mean, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, they're all US based, they're all American companies. Why they should start listening to somebody from Germany, you know? I mean, you have your experts there. But then over the last years, I realized that this is actually a strength because it's a unique selling proposition I have, and I can double down on that.
Yeah, lately, you know, we do talk with some of the people on this podcast, you know, about being unique and creating good content, and, you know, soon we'll be getting into story building and you know, that type of stuff, which is super important, right? So people can connect with us. It is unique for you, but how did you start using it? Because I think initially you just started doing content. You didn't say like, hey, I'm the German guy doing content, right? Like that must have came at some point where you sort of sneaked that in and now it's a part of your brand.
Absolutely. I mean, I started way back at the time. I mean, I started with the internet back in 1997. I was back at school. Online banking was not even invented. And I started selling CDs over the internet. I had a page, Funniest DE, which was like a fun page. I sold like everything on burned on a CD, like jokes and quotes and videos and all kinds of stuff. And I realized, wow, the internet is working 24/7 for me. I can make money. Other people were like, delivering newspaper and doing those kind of stuff. And I was selling CDs over the internet. And then in 2005, next to my studies, I became one of the managing partners of one of the first social networks we had in Germany called Attractive People. That was 1 year after Facebook was founded. It was one of the very few social networks we had in Germany. And I was building that company back in 2005 over a period of 2 years. And then Facebook decided to come to Germany. And like a snap, crashed all of us. I mean, Facebook just dominated. If you ever run a startup, you know how that feels.
Yeah.
I mean, your startup is your baby. It's you against the world, right? And another company from the States comes to your company, to your country, and just dominates the whole market. And I became obsessed, actually, with Facebook after that and asked myself, so what did, which is kind of a bold thought, I guess, what has Facebook what I hadn't? And that's when I started to realize it's all about attention. Who has the eyeballs has the control, and who has reach and have something to say and people listen. It's all about that KLT factor, right? If people know, like, and trust you, they do business with you, they stay with you, and so on. And I ask myself, how can I be a part in it? And so back in 2007, 2008, I started to work with brands in Germany back at that time to do social media for them. So I did all those fan gates back at that time. I was doing like Facebook apps. I was doing the Facebook strategy for them. And I built an agency based on this. And until 2015, I started, for example, a couple of brands. One brand was Trendyou. It was the first mobile marketplace for fashion that we had in Germany. And I sold this to a publishing house called Burda here in Germany. And that made it possible for me to move to the States and found another company, Bella Candles, which is a scented candle company with a ring inside. So the candle burns down and the ring appears, which only based on social media. We did a lot of influencer marketing, Facebook ads. We built that company from scratch to 3 million in revenue in a period of 18 months based on that single variable. There is underpriced attention. And then in 2015, I stumbled upon Periscope. I've never wanted to be a brand, an influencer, something like that. I wanted to build brands. I'm an entrepreneur. I mean, since 16, I started companies. I wanted to build them. And as I saw Periscope for the very first time, it was so intriguing to me to work and talk with people, life, like one too many. And as I started to talk about my journey, starting from 1997 and starting to tell people how to use live video in the most efficient way, and as Periscope featured me, then very quickly over a period of, as I said, 3 years, I built that brand. But people always think like I started in 2015, but that's not true. I started back in 1997. So it was a long journey until I really found what I want to do and shared like with them what I've done in the past.
When did you inject this this being German into the whole thing, right? Because I, like you said, in the beginning, you thought it was a disadvantage. So I bet you were just trying to put out real content in English, but at some point you said it turned into an advantage. Can you just kind of maybe share that little point when it transferred from one to the next?
I don't actually have a point in my mind when I understood that this is actually a strength instead of a weakness. I believe the real insight for myself was when I understood that any weakness you have, as long as you don't try to pretend you're something else or you pretend you're something you are not, people respect that. So I learned to play with it. I said like, well, I'm quite confused myself that so many people follow me because I can't even speak English very properly. And I make jokes about myself, like, which is actually a true story. Once somebody in the chat said he was from India and he said, "I love you, Alex, so much because you use so simple words. I can understand you." Which is kind of a backhanded compliment, to be honest.
that's a nice one.
But you know, if you play and if you understand your weakness, it plays into self-awareness. You need to understand where you're really good at and where you're not, and not try to pretend that you're something else. I mean, many people go in that direction to fake it till you make it. I was very fortunate when I started with Periscope because I didn't have to make money with it because I had a real job. So I was just playing with it and I loved using it and I loved to deliver because it felt like a family. I mean, I started to use a hashtag, which is a kind of version of my last name, Khan. My name is Alex Khan, and I used it like "We Khan." Like that Obama's claim, we can, right? I played with that because I wanted to see if people use it. And that whole thing, that whole idea was that we can inspire each other and we can learn from another and we can rise together. And I partnered up with TechBoard and I told people I will talk about this hashtag and everyone who's using that hashtag. And until that time, I haven't talked about that hashtag probably like 18 or 20 months. And people are still using this because everyone who's using it is aggregated on the website wecan.com, which is still existing. So no matter if you use that hashtag on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, you will be on our website too. And so I started talking about this, and within 90 days, we reached 13 million people with 100 million impressions of that hashtag. If you look it up on Instagram, there are more than 10,000 results with that hashtag. And that's what I mean, that you talked about community. It's amazing for me to see that there are no gateway keepers anymore. If you have a pure message, no matter who you are in the world, and you're true to yourself, no matter where you are, who you are, people relate to that. And so to answer your question, there is no point when I said, like, wow, that's a strength, I should double down on that, I'm German. I was just myself. I am German. You understand it by just listening to me that I'm not an American-based guy based on my accent. You understand it from the first sentence. So I started to just play with it. And that's, I believe, when it became a strength.
Yeah, see, that's what's super interesting. And the reason I've been asking you is because, you know, when I deal with clients, right, and let's just say lawyers or dentists, they all want to create exact duplicates of what everyone else is doing, right? So if one dentist has a website or any type of business, they want to make something that looks just the same and don't stick out, right? But if you don't have that unique thing, and I really like this turning a disadvantage into an advantage, you know, you're just lost. You can't get your voice out because you don't have a voice, right? So it's like getting this voice out, getting the story out. You know, and this is why I'm so curious about yours.
You will never be a better version of Kim Kardashian than she is, right? No matter what you do, she will always be the best Kim Kardashian. So you need to ask yourself, what's the best version of yourself? And how can you be self-aware? And I believe like the first step is to understand your history. What have you done in the past? What makes you the person you are right now? Talk to your close environment and ask them, hey, what do you think I'm good at? And please feel free to slap me in the face and tell me honestly what you think I'm bad at and evaluate on this. I believe that too many people, that's a very interesting point you just mentioned, are trying to be something they're not. And they're wondering why they're failing at something they are not, instead of focusing on what they really are. And that's, I believe, like the true kicker. Once you really understand who you are and what you're good at, you will become successful.
You know, you probably coach a lot of people on this. Do you have any books that you recommend for getting some more insight into this topic?
I mean, probably one person who's talking a lot about this is Gary Vaynerchuk. Another one, so all his books I read, of course. Tony Robbins is another great example of somebody who's focusing on motivation and inspiration and understanding who you really are. Besides that, I mean, I'm not really good with names, but there are like tons of different books. But I believe more important than I mean, reading those books, I mean, I'm reading probably a book every 1 to 2 weeks. So I'm a huge fanatic of reading books. I believe there is so much. One great example is Sam Walt, Made in America. When he built Walmart, right? And he wrote a book at the end of his life where he summed up all his life experiences. A great, great book. Most people haven't read or heard about it. There are so many great books, but I believe an alternative of reading books is I'm a big believer in mentorship. I'm a big believer in reaching out people who live the life you want to live and add value to them at some point and ask if you can do anything for them or if they have a tip like you asked, like a book, a class, something they have done in the past, or just a little tip to get from them and to learn from real life experiences. Books is one example, but I'm, as I said, like I'm a big, big believer in reaching out to people who are successful, who have done it, and try to add value to them. And at some point, once you figured out what they really like, added value to them, reach out to them with just one simple question, but understand that you don't do something for them and it gives you the right to take. It gives you the possibility to ask a question. And if you're lucky, they do something back to you. So just to understand and put it in the right perspective.
Yeah, you just mentioned influencers. And when I looked through your website, you did have something in your online course talking about how to network with experts on autopilot. Can you share a little bit of that?
Definitely. So one part of working with and surrounding yourself with influencers is definitely conferences. Especially in my field, in the social media field. I mean, social media is all about relationship building. Once you go to those conferences and you surround yourself, you go to the keynote of somebody, you ask a question, which takes, you need to have and find the confidence to stand up once there's Q&A, ask them a question, tell something about them that you like, that they understand that you are someone who followed for a longer time. Maybe even you take pictures, then you go home, you send some pictures to them about it, how much you liked it. Maybe you add a little extra about it. So it's a process, you know, you try to build contact points with people. It's not 100% automated though, but once you have the process in place, like you think about those people you want to reach out to, you see where they're speaking, you go there, you take a picture, you ask a question, you build context, in short, about those. And then after the conference, you reach out to them again, you give some props, you send the picture, and you like some pictures afterwards. If you do this with the right people over and over again, live video is another great example. I mean, the great advantage of live video is that you really talk to the people you want to reach out to. You don't know on an Instagram post or on a Facebook message if it's not an assistant. But if you watch people live, and most of those are actually on Facebook Live or Periscope, you can reach out to these, you can write comments, you can repeat what they say, which always people love to do. They love to hear themselves, and I love that you repeat it. You just text what they have said for other people to sum it up. So there are a couple of ways you can do to build a relationship with those people. You can identify the closest fans and followers of them. There are tools for this, who are most active, and reach out to them, add value to these people, and at some point reach out to them and ask, like, maybe you can make me an intro to the person you want to reach out to. So there are steps in between, you know. You cannot go to some celebrity and say like, hey, I'm your best friend right now. As you kind of go out of the street and say like, hey, I just met you, can you help me move? You're my best friend right now. But there are a couple of ways, like baby steps, you can do in the right direction. And if you do this over a period of time, you can basically reach out to anyone. Because no matter if it's B2C or B2B, we are all in the P2P, in the people-to-people industry. And if you add value to other people, I believe your success in social media is a direct reflection on how much you care about people, no matter who. There is no person in the world who will hate you for providing value, right?
Yeah, that's true. Let's build on that a little bit, because now that you mentioned how to talk with influencers and, you know, and then the conferences, the one thing we've been kind of chatting about with the last few interviewers is content marketing, right? Creating really good content and building off of that. And you also said something about having tricks to get featured in major blogs like Forbes and those other ones. So so moving from contacting influencers, what do you use? What are the tips to get your great content out there and maybe make those connections with some of these, you know, editors and writers?
Absolutely. So first of all, you need to understand how media has shifted over the past 20 years. 20 years to be featured in a magazine, in an offline print version, there was limited space. It was very hard to be featured in a Forbes or Huffington Post newspaper or in any magazine because there was limited space. How does it work right now? They are paid by clicks. The more clicks they get, the more payment they get. They have an infinite space and they can write hundreds and thousands of blog posts. And as long as it's interesting, they will feature you. So now the question is, what is interesting about yourself? Which plays again into self-awareness. What have you achieved? In which niche are you good at? Are you feature worthy about? So here's the process. First of all, you Google, you go on Google, you can cite that and then Forbes.com and then the topic to see like all blog posts in Forbes or all blog posts in the Huffington Post about your topic. And then you identify there are tons of free columnists, free journalists who work for the Huffington Post, who work for Forbes. You see about what they are writing and you start building a relationship with them by asking questions about their topics, reaching out to them, asking a contextual question, maybe making the intro of somebody you know who they could interview, first of all. And then once you build that relationship, you craft a story about yourself which is fitting or adding context to what they have already written about, and you just pitch it to them. Either way you pitch it, like you don't know them before, I recommend to first of all build a relationship with them, not directly try to marry them at first sight. So really for over a period of time, a couple of weeks, and then start to talk about them. So What's interesting to you? So what are you writing about right now? And they say, maybe about live video, maybe about like artificial intelligence. Oh, great. I know somebody I can make you an intro to. So they thank you. Or maybe as a second place, you have something to add. So you pitch them your story. So the whole process is, first of all, identify the right people who talk about something in your niche, build a relationship with them, and pitch it to them. There is no reason they shouldn't write about it if the story is complete, because the more stories they have, the more clicks the magazines get, the more revenue for them. The problem is the mind shift, you know, because it wasn't like this 20 years ago, but now it's quite easy. I mean, I reach out to Forbes, I reach out to Huffington Post, I reach out to Inc. I mean, last month I got free covers in Inc. just by providing value about doing exactly what I just shared with you.
Yeah, that's interesting. Any tips on building an email list from those points, right? Because, you know, being featured on something is okay, but if no one comes back into your funnel, it doesn't really matter.
True. So that's a totally different point. I don't believe that you will get a lot of traffic from those blogs, from those magazines, from those outlets. I mean, I was featured in some of them, and there was not one where I said like, wow, that really gave me so much traffic. I have to be again in this. It's more like social proof. It's more like I can say it's like I was featured in Forbes and Huffington Post. So that it gives you like credibility, authority and proof. But talking about traffic, it's a different story. When we talk about traffic, in my eyes, there are two different ways to proceed. Way number one is if you run a blog, many people focus too much on pushing out more content instead of optimizing the content they already have. There's a free tool, Google Search Insights, I believe like Page Insights, where you can see which of your blog posts are already listed and you already gain traffic from. So you take a look at the top five and you try to optimize these. I did this like 3 or 4 months ago. I was focused on the top five and I probably doubled my traffic within 2 to 4 weeks by just adding more keywords to this. Seeing, you can see like if you go to that free tool, which Google provides you, you can see what are the search queries people are finding your page. And you can just enter some of these search queries, which are the most important, and optimize it to the one who gives you the most traffic. And by doing so, it will probably double. I mean, for me, it was just doubling my traffic, but just doing this. The other way is just reaching out to other blogs who are big in your field and ask if you can write a story. It's the same, probably the same process like getting featured in those big magazines is getting your name out in the big blogs to become like a free journalist, a free editor, and giving yourself a backlink to gain more authority for your blog. So I believe like reaching out to other ones who have traffic, reaching out and asking if you can be interviewed is another possibility. And optimizing the blog posts you already have are two great ways to drive more traffic to your blog.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the social media aspect. Lately, a lot of bad news about Facebook. You've probably seen it, right? Left and right. Privacy, young people leaving Facebook. What are your thoughts on this?
First of all, I believe it's not actually that bad when it comes down to the trouble of organic reach. I understand that many brands are worrying. But why did Mark Zuckerberg make that change? Because many companies were just pushing out bad content, starting with clickbaiting, up to fake news, to all kinds of not relevant for their audience content. So they didn't understand it, and that's why they made that shift. And I believe long-term it's for the better, because the most important thing for Facebook and also us for using Facebook and for us marketeers is that people are still on Facebook. So I believe it's not necessarily a bad thing. Now you need to double down on paid ads. I mean, for magazines, for radio, for TV, it's the same thing. You have to pay. You have to pay to play. I mean, no TV channel comes to you and says, like, hey, I love you so much, I will give you a free ad. But for Facebook, people expect that. Right? They say, well, it's organic. I built that fans before. It's my fans. It's not. It's Facebook fans. You're just renting it. And now they're taking it back from you. So now you need to understand the Facebook ads product, which in my eyes is the most advanced product, ad product in the world. It's amazing what you can do. Thinking about all the retargeting, the lookalike audiences, the custom audience, all the tools Facebook's providing you, by knowing one variable better than any company in the world, which is context, you can reach out to so targeted. I can reach out to a mom of a 6 to 8 year old son, and I can write a title to all moms. I can basically do a matching between the creative and the ad setting, which is amazing. I can highly build laser targeted audience and reach out to them. So I don't believe necessarily that this is a bad thing. Talking about people leaving Facebook, okay, where do they leave to? They leave to Instagram. So who owns Instagram? Facebook. So am I really worrying that people are leaving Facebook? No, because they're again in the Facebook environment. So what do you need to know? You need to know how Instagram ads work. So how does Instagram ads work? The same way like Facebook ads. So I know that there's a lot of confusion in the market right now and people are like insecure, but in my eyes, it's all about knowing the Facebook ads product and knowing who is your target audience, knowing like how can you reach out to them in the perfect way and how to build relevant ads, which plays in into your strategy to drive people not only from A to B, but to convert them at some point. In my eyes, there are three different types of marketing. There's marketing you can control, which are ads. The more money you spend, the more reach you gain. If you do it clever, you get a better return on investment. If you're not, you don't. There is marketing you can't control, which is social media. You don't know who will like, see, or comment your post, which is also, by the way, PR. You don't know who's going on page 45 to see your ad. And there is marketing which you own, which in my eyes is emails and phone numbers. So it's about converting from marketing you can and you can't control to marketing you own, which plays along what you said before, to gain emails at some point. And then again, have an email funnel warming up your leads. And then at some point, guide them to a webinar or to a call or to buying your product, leading them to a sales page. So what you need is a comprehensive, strategic sales funnel, starting with ads and ending with a conversion.
What is your take on conversational marketing? That's a new topic that's super popular at all the conferences we go to now.
Absolutely. The reason for it is, by the way, as we both know, that chat apps, like all those messenger apps, are like evolving really quickly. There are a couple of apps who have more than a billion users right now, like Facebook Messenger, and it's growing very quickly. I believe that chat bots or all those conversational marketing is very interesting because you have a dialogue, you try dialogues. The question is now, do you go with chat bots, like, for example, ManyChat, and you build these? For this, you again need to understand that it needs to be a conversation, not just an advertisement, which already is a problem for some brands. But more importantly is, in my eyes, to really understand, and this is important for all kinds of social media, to understand who is your audience and what is going through their mind and what are they really interested in it, so that you can start providing value either way through messages or through ads or through emails. It's all the same thing. The communication was always the same. It's text, it's image, it's video. Just the place where we're having those conversations or this dialogue has changed. But it was always the same. For me, it's fascinating that people think it's such a new deal. It's not. I mean, live video also, it's not something new. Mobile live video maybe is a new place. Now we do it on a smartphone, but what we do right now is live conversation. It's not new. So don't try to reinvent the wheel. It was always like that. So now you just have better possibilities to target the right person. But at the end, it's about to understand who's the person you talk to and providing something which they like and which they start trusting you so that at some point they start buying from you.
Yeah, so it's not a big shift, but it's a huge change in the way we're marketing, right? Because when you think of ourselves as consumers, right, for a long time, we've been used to watching someone else's content and then pitching us during that time, right? So watching TV shows or reading paper, anything like that. The moment someone comes in into our Facebook Messenger, you know, I picture that as having a very intimate conversation with someone you know, and then a salesperson tapping you on the shoulder and saying, hey, listen to me now. And it's even worse when they do it when it's an automated bot or just a commercial. That is just so out there, which I don't know. Just what do you think?
I agree. Like you described it, I agree. But that's just the wrong way of doing it. That's what you just described is a scenario where somebody is trying to marry you at the first 5 minutes. He's providing a little bit of value. He's answering a question. It's if you use those chatbots and those messenger possibilities Facebook is providing you as a sales trap, means providing 1 minute of value and then asking directly to sell somebody, then of course it won't work. And then of course Facebook will change it. And then in 1 year, Facebook will shut it off again and say, like, well, listen, now you have to pay for every message you send because we screwed it over. But that's just a repetition of history. I mean, marketers ruin everything. That's what we do. That's what we build for. We see something people are interested in, and we just think how we can make a sale out of it. It was always like that. I mean, you see something where people are, where there's a huge crowd, and you just think, okay, how can I put my ad out there, right? Instead of starting to really providing value at first place. And if you don't have enough value to provide for free, then you might need to change it. I mean, I built my audience based on 1 year not selling anything. From March 2015 till March 2016, exactly 1 year, I was going live every single day for free. I was not even pitching an email or anything. It was just providing 100% value. And that's why people started to trusting and following. And the number one reason when I ask students of mine, why did you buy my product? The number one answer was because you helped me before. Because you gave us some value for free. I implemented it. I started to trust myself that I can use your guidance. And I started to trust you that you provide value. And I believe this is a core thought you should have when you do marketing nowadays. I believe that too many people try to sell you something too early instead of really building that KLT factor to a certain point until people really start to trust. Because you have to understand, people are not buying for two reasons. Reason number one is they don't trust you. And reason number two is they don't trust themselves that what you tell them can be beneficial for them. And you have to cross those two barriers until they really start trusting you and following your advice. So I believe like the scenario you just shared just proves to me that just people doing it wrong.
What would you think would be the right way to enter that type of conversation? Because you know we can target people the same way we do with ads, except this is the place where they talk with their friends and family.
I mean, there are studies out there. I don't know if you should follow those studies 100%, but there are studies that you need like 7 contacts with a person until a person starts trusting you. Means if you think about 7 contacts and we take a plain, simple sales funnel, he's seeing your ad, which is providing, and don't write ebooks, by the way. I don't know, asking you, have you ever downloaded an ebook but have never read it?
I've signed up to people's email list because I like them and they sent me ebooks, which I completely ignored. I didn't sign up to get the ebook in the first place.
There you go. So I believe like what you should send to people should be like at most a one pager, like one single nugget which they helps them from go from A to B. So just a little insight. People try to give like 10 tips and an ebook and all those things. So it should be something very simple, like one little nugget to give to them. And that's why they sign up at the first place, because they want to have that simple nugget. And then every couple of days or every 24 hours, you can send them another simple nugget. You can also start talking about yourself, your struggle, why you're different, what makes you the person you are, but without selling them and sending them a couple of emails, for example, and then go to a sales page instead of trying to sell from a Facebook ad directly, or people try to sell on a thank you page. After I signed up for your newsletter, I already have to buy something for a cheap price and so on. I believe the main problem is really trying to make that sale too early. Why not asking them to follow you on your Instagram profile and providing more value? But the problem is that people either way don't have enough content, or I don't know, like, what does it mean, a sales program, a sales funnel to build this at the first place. They try, I believe, honestly, that the main problem is selling too much too early instead of really figuring out what are the needs of the person, really spending time, because you waste, I believe, people. And also another thought, which just came to my mind, is focusing on the clients you already have. Too many people make that mistake that they're just focusing on getting new clients, new signups, new blog posts, new visitors, instead of focusing on the ones you already have and try to please them better, try to provide them better value, try to help them in another way. When did you reach out? And just one simple strategy I'm usually doing, like, once a year, is reaching out to all my clients, to my close network, and just asking, how can I help you? That's it. Not asking for anything. How can I help you? That's simple.
Yeah, I've heard that strategy before, and it works well. I've done it to actually reignite some old contacts and lists. You know, it's
exactly.
Yeah, because people will respond to that. You know, like, hey, haven't heard from you in I don't know how long. It's all on my side. I forgot, you know, and just, how can I help you? Like, what are you working on?
Yeah. What are you working on? How can I help you? We haven't met for a while. What's up with you? All those, instead of trying to get cold prospects, going for the ones who already believed in you, who did something for you already, where you did something for them most of the time. So there are tons of way to increase your business. And I believe we are too distracted, and everyone is so distracted. I mean, as you said, you also downloaded some, you signed up for some newsletters, you like people, and then they try to sell you, or they sent you stuff which is not related. Also, to personalize is a very important part. So, for example, I have an Instagram sales funnel, I have a Facebook sales funnel, I have a Snapchat sales funnel. Many brands I'm working with, even in the fashion industry, they don't even cluster between male and female. Everyone gets the same newsletter. It's the weirdest thing. I'm not interested in red high heels when I sign up for a fashion newsletter. So really understanding who's your market, who are your best clients, reaching out to them, double down on the clients you already have, and really understanding who are they and where you can find more of them, maybe also by recommendations. It's a great way. Getting intros from other people, asking, like, who in your organization I can talk to. Maybe you can refer me, instead of trying to sell somebody who has, first of all, is not in charge for your product or service. Second, is not interested in it. So there are tons of ways you can go through it. But I believe the number one is really to not go in too early.
Yeah, that's interesting that you mentioned the segmenting. You know, most of the year I stay in Thailand, and when I talk about products with just people there, like even my girlfriend, and I'll just say, hey, maybe you should get some whey protein, you know, because you're working out too, just like mine. And she's like, well, you know, I need to get the one for women, right? Even though it's the same thing, it's just protein. But she's always saying, you know, you have the men's one, I want the women one. But in America, it seems like there's a big movement now for everything to start getting non-gender, you know, like, you can't say male or female. So there's a little politics, I think, involved, you know, when it comes to segmenting that way here.
Okay. Yeah. In Germany, it's probably different. And that was just one example. I mean, there are tons of examples. You can cluster people by color, by brand, by so many different, by sizes, you know. I mean, Amazon does it very well without asking you those questions. I mean, the technology is existing, and of course I understand it's the Premier League when I talk about Amazon, but I'm really, like, well, kind of surprised what less of an effort people make by crafting a strategy first. Well, there are two types of problems. One problem is that people spend too less of a time to think about a strategy thoroughly, so the whole strategy at once, to understand, first of all, what are my assets? What is my USP? What is my proposition? Then second, who is my competition? What are they doing? Which hashtags are they using? When do they post? What do they post? What ads do they use? Which influencers they work with? Which hashtags they use? Number three, what is the right content? Number four, who is my audience? So many brands haven't evaluated even audience insights, which is an amazing tool. Audience insights gives you tons of information about what people like, and people who like brand X like also brand Y and like this magazine and this store and so on. So evaluate this. And then number five, taking a look at the Facebook ads product. And from those 5 points, building a strategy. Most strategies are really just taking a look at another page and say like, oh, they're on Facebook. We have to be on Facebook too. So now let's just post something. Or asking a younger dude in an organization, hey, you on Facebook and Instagram, right? Okay, cool. You do our Facebook and Instagram channels now. The weirdest thing. There are up to one client of mine, he makes like around 200 million a year. That was a strategy. They were running the social media channels. It's like, we tried Facebook, it didn't work. Or the people are not on Facebook. Our clients are not on Facebook. We talk about 2.1 billion people. We only have 7.5 billion people in the world. Half of them have no access to internet. This means more than every second person with an access to internet is at least once a month on Facebook. I mean, it's very hard to ignore that.
Yeah, I get that same thing from clients sometimes. You know, I try to move them off from Facebook to YouTube ads just because we can target them really well too, and they're much cheaper. And I get the same thing like, oh, I don't think my clients are on YouTube. And I'm like, well, the video you're using for the Facebook ad is something you cut from YouTube. And the actual influencers have channels on there, which we can just pretty much, you know, get into. I mean, they did all the work. We can just put the ads on those channels. But I do think that it's just, you know, sticking with the old ways, right? Even if they're not working really well, people are just scared of new stuff. And yeah, another thing is us marketers, we do mess up the new stuff pretty quickly.
That's true. We ruin everything.
We do. But that's the beauty of marketing, right? That's what...
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, everything is trying to evolve to run from us, and we get in and ruin it, and it evolves again, and it's like a never-ending cycle.
Yeah, that's why you need to be quick, you know, because other marketers will understand the same. That's why conversational marketing is such a hot topic right now, because not many people grasp it, and even less people understand how to do it properly. It's good, but down the road, I believe no matter what you do, when you really care, I mean, I cannot underscore the word care as much as it deserves to be taken care of. It's really, I mean, every single client I'm having, it's always the same when they understand that you really don't want to sell them. Nobody wants to work with somebody who tries just to sell and squeeze the most out of you. If you really think that you can game the system at some point, I mean, at the beginning you talked about fake influencers and buying, and I mean, yeah, I understand social proof. I understand that this will work to a certain point, but your reputation is everything. When you do false stuff, when you betray people, now we are living in the age of social media, it goes like a fireball. And the same way, it's in a positive. It's a vicious circle, in a negative and a positive way. So as long as you do good stuff and you talk about it and you get social proof from other people and you start working for free for somebody who's big in that industry and he gives you social proof in return And then you go to the next person and say, hey, listen, I have done for this person, you probably know him, I did this and that was the result. And you go to the next one. That's how you build a business. You know, it's really, in my eyes, it's really simple once we understand the dynamics. And the dynamics are really about getting into the know, that people start knowing you, providing value so that people start liking you. That's when they start listening to you. And that's when they start to care about what you say. And then by doing this consistently, building up trust so that they start doing business with you. That's the principle.
You know, the one thing I would sort of, I don't know, push back on is, you know, doing the right thing. Even when we think about what's right and wrong, and we look at, like, you know, philosophy and things, and I've spoke about this with some friends, it's super hard to figure out what's right and wrong for each person, right? Like, we all have different ways we think about the world. You know, I think if everyone on the internet only thinks about being, you know, politically correct and doing the right thing, they will never have an opinion or be unique, because they'll be scared that there's going to be some backlash against them. Someone might not like them, which, you know, in my opinion, that's fine. You know, half the people will like you, half won't. But I think caring, yeah, I mean, you should care about people in general. But, you know, I don't think you can take it too far without losing some of your edge.
Well, I'm not talking to be 100% political correct. You have to do you. You have to share your insight. I mean, I believe, and that gives me strength, that my intent is good. That's my core belief. So no matter what I do, even if other people think like that's not the right way, I don't care, because I believe strongly inside myself, my intent is good. I like what I'm doing and I'm trying to provide value. If other people think there is no value in it, good for them. I mean, anyway, if people are happy with themselves, they shouldn't watch my content. Mazel tov. It's great. Go on with it. There are people who make like 50K a year and they are more happy than anybody else I know. And there are people I know who make like 50 million a year and they're miserable. So financial freedom, financial success, doing the right things and getting paid for it, it's just one variable. But I believe strongly inside myself that when you do what you yourself believe is good, it's always the right thing.
I think
that's no matter what it is.
Yeah, I think that's a really good note to leave the episode on. So, Alex, I took up a lot of your time. It was a great conversation. Where can people find you?
They find me everywhere at One Alex Khan. I have to spell it because it's usually not how people spell it. It's A-L-E-X-K-H-A-N. So K-H-A-N and the number one. It's not because I want to telling everyone I'm premier. Alex Khan was just taken. It's a very popular Indian name, I heard. So all Alex Khan was taken. You find me on alexkhan.tv. That was the only one I got. Alex Khan TV is my website. And I'm looking forward. And as I said, it's not, I'm also like walking the walk. So if you have a question, if you want to reach out to, do it. I'm answering my own emails. I'm answering all my channels myself. I have no assistant doing this. Although sometimes it's not funny to get the question 50 times a day, which is the right hashtag for me. But okay. Yeah, just reach out. I would love to know what's up with you and how can I help, right?
Perfect.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.